You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and AM 1510 WWBC. And we're also online everywhere in the world. I almost forgot our AM station there. Focusing, Sita,
focusing. You recovered.
I recovered.
You can find us online. Right, exactly. You can find us online and listen live. Just hit that www.1510wwbc.com. Just hit that listen live button. Or if you want to have any of our archive shows, you can check by date. Just hit on demand and you pick the date that you'd like to listen to. We have been on the show every Monday, every single Monday for the last 12 years on this 1 o'clock time slot. So you just have to pick that day. And then, of course, all of our shows are shared on our Facebook page, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Sita Media Inc., and then also our website, which is Sita Media. So lots of places you can find it. But basically, if you Google Sita Biggie, she's on there.
Yeah, sometimes I Google myself and I get scared.
You should.
So on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill and myself and Samantha, who does our social media. And now we have Allie. Allie's now an addition to our show.
Good morning.
Thank you, Allie. So we sit here and we talk about things that are going on around the nation right here in Brevard. We speak to people, with people. We talk about topics related, unrelated to us, whatever it is. It's a fun, unscripted, very entertaining show, and it's quite informative, and we give out valuable information to our listeners and our friends who tune in every Monday to Sita, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And today is no different. In studio, we have a packed studio today, Miss Ellen. We have Allie, of course, who's sitting next to Ellen, and she's now a show's resident. She's part of the show.
That works.
And that works.
That works.
That works
for me.
And we have Hospice of St. Francis Reflections, which my good friend Mary Larson is here. Mary is the Director of Business and Development and Communications, and she has been with St. Francis Reflections. Thank God I don't have to say the whole thing. For 10 years, and she has a background in social work, home health, and community outreach. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us again, Sita. It's great to be here.
And you're welcome. We always have the Trinidadian connection on this show somehow or the other. If it's not Mrs. Duke's brother who was on the movie set or something, somebody is here. So we have Ilana Pitcher, and she is the Business Development Manager at St. Francis Reflections Life Stage Care. She has been with St. Francis for 5 years and has extensive knowledge and benefits about what hospice provides, their care, and all that good stuff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us, Sita.
You're welcome. And, of course, my good friend Phoebe Walker is here. And, Phoebe, I've been trying forever to get you on the show and speak about your books, all the great things you're doing, talk about the award you just won, life coaching, whatever it is. So welcome. And you're going to be on the second segment.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So, Ellen, this morning as I was preparing for the show, I know we always have something we talk about before we start our show. And Hospice of St. Francis Reflections is going to go first with Mary Larson. But, you know, what I was thinking about was we're hearing all these things that are going on with children, ideas that children get, the book bannings, parents are being, you know, helicopter parents. And it's true, we should look out for our kids. But, you know, one of the topics that my friends and I were speaking about was sleepovers. And it's such a cultural thing. A lot of people don't like sleepovers for their children based on the fact you have to know where your kids are spending the night and what's going into their brain. So parents might be watching something in the school system and not letting their kid read a certain book, but they're going to let that kid go to a sleepover and go on the internet with their friends. So I don't know if you had any sleepovers when you were a kid, but I was kind of against it when my kids were little.
Well, you
and
I both had big families, so parents who sent kids over to our house knew that they might not get the same kid back. Yeah. Might be a different one. Same age, same height, but different one. But so in your house, it was the same thing, most likely. But we didn't have a whole lot of room for more kids in our house to have sleepovers. And we weren't really allowed to go.
We didn't have food to feed them if they come.
And we had kids over for dinner for sure because, I mean, what was one more mouth to feed at that point? However, but we didn't spend the night at people's houses. And people didn't spend the night at our house. It was 8 o'clock or something like that. The street lights came on. And then everybody went to their corners.
Well, I distinctly remember, like, we would be having parties in Tortoise Island for Jasmine for her birthday or Kimmy or Mikey or BJ or whatever. And parents would drop their kids off and won't even come to the door and say hello. How do you drop your kid off to spend a night at someone's home and you don't even come to shake the hand of the homeowner and say, hi, my name is Mrs. Adams and my son Johnny is going to be spending the night with your son who is his friend from school. Some people don't even do that, but yet still they're complaining about what the kids are reading in the schools. So I just want to throw that out there, you know, the cheerleading squad, they're all dressed up to the nines, showing everything that you know should be hidden sometimes, and they're taking their boyfriends at the age of 12, 13, 14, 15 with them to the meets. I know this because I saw it. So I think as a society, we have to be careful that what we're preaching, we're actually practicing sometimes.
In managerial classes, which is different from parenting, but pretty close. We used to say, you have to inspect what you expect. So if you expect your children to act a certain way, you've got to inspect it, right?
That's right.
If you expect certain things, you've got to inspect it and make sure that things are up to your par.
Well, that's a good segue for my good friends from Hospice of St. Francis Reflections. Because they do inspect and they know what's going on. So Mary, let's start with you. Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself and how you got started with Hospice of St. Francis Reflections. Now it's rolling off my tongue like that.
See, you say it a few times and yes. It just becomes habit. Yes, it took us a while to get used to our new name. We were Hospice of St. Francis, but we are the same organization, just a new name. We've been in Brevard County for about over 40 years, since 1977, and we were the first hospice in Brevard County and the second in the state of Florida, and today we are still the only independent nonprofit hospice in Brevard County. I have been with St. Francis for 10 years. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I started there as a volunteer coordinator, working with volunteers in the Melbourne area, and then moved into more of the business development community outreach side of things, also working with our grief support teams and their incredible work that they're doing. My background is in social work, and I worked for 16 years with kids and families who were experiencing difficulties in their home life, and then I moved into medical social work with a home care agency. So have worked with many, many people who were recovering from surgeries or serious illnesses. And it was in that role that I first learned about hospice and why hospice sometimes is the preferred care for someone who is very ill.
That's right. So well said. And Elena, you have a lot of knowledge about what hospice does, their benefits, and you also educate the physicians and healthcare facilities and stuff. How did you get involved with hospice?
Thank you for asking. I moved here 17 years ago from Canada, believe it or not, and I have a background in working in long-term care. When I first came to Florida, I worked at a long-term care facility in Vieira as a social services specialist, and that's where I had the opportunity to foster relationships with interdisciplinary teams that came in to care for our patients and our families. During that time, you know, we fostered relationships with hospice as they came in to provide comfort care measures for patients who had a decline in their condition. That's when I knew I had a passion and a heart for hospice. Our careers lead us to so many different journeys, and finding an opportunity with St. Francis Reflections was part of my journey. And being part of the business development team that has afforded the opportunity to educate our providers across Brevard on the importance of hospice is instrumental. It empowers the provider to educate their patients on hospice and comfort care measures, and when is the time to refer? So, you know, our career journeys take us down a path that we are very passionate about, and to be able to provide comfort care measures to our patients and families across Brevard is crucial.
Right, and it's not just educating the physicians and staff and others in nursing facilities and the community about medical care, but also about the spiritual side of it and emotional side of it as well, because growing older, bolder, wiser, but then getting to the point where it's the quality of life versus the quantity, it comes with all these additional things, right?
Yes, indeed.
And so, Mary, you guys see about 400 patients a day, but there is a trend that I see as a nurse and that I hear about from other people as well, that people are being referred to hospices too late. What can we do about that? Because a lot of people feel as though when you put someone on hospice, they're at death's door. But the truth of the matter is you can refer people to hospice who are terminal, but not at that point where the good Lord is taking them right away. And people, for some reason, are not educated enough, or something is happening, but it's getting there too late.
Yes, exactly, Sita. Thank you for bringing that up. We are seeing that trend, and it is something that we are trying to educate about, because when someone comes into hospice care, their quality of life, and oftentimes physically, they improve, actually, and can feel better. Sometimes they live longer, actually, because they've come on to hospice services. There's statistics to back that up. And the focus is not just on their illness, but on their emotional and spiritual life, what they want out of life still. You know, we're not dead until we're dead. And until we die, we're living. And that's our philosophy in hospice, is how can we help you live the best life you can for however long you have left. And we have the best opportunity to do that as hospice providers. When people come to us, they're still alert, oriented, if possible, able to talk with us about what they want. And when their caregivers are not so stressed and burnt out from trying to care for them, that they can participate in that discussion as well.
Right, and I see Allie, who is a resident friend on the show. She's shaking her head. Allie, I know you always have a nugget of great experience to share with our listeners and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, so go for it.
Well, my father recently passed and was spending his last few days at hospice, and I wasn't able to be there because it was quick and not in Florida. And the softness, the emotional steadiness that we experienced with the hospice team was... it's a calling like being a pastor.
Yeah, and we TLC, the tender love and care.
Yes, and right. it wasn't anything you could put your finger on. It was like it was the aura of the place. It was the climate.
The understanding of what's happening.
And it was lovely and peaceful, and it was
dignity.
handled really well.
With dignity, yeah. And so, so Ilana, let's talk a little bit about the care and the services that are rendered and provided by Hospice of St. Francis Reflections. What can someone expect when they go through the process to give you their data, their insurances, and what's happening, and what are the care level?
The admissions process, you know, we do work with multi-interdisciplinary team members through our organization. And when we do receive a referral, we have an intake and admissions department that runs those insurance. And, you know, hospice is a Medicare, it's a benefit that's covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial insurances.
I don't think enough people understand that. Sometimes I wish there was a billboard, like, everywhere that says it is covered, because people think they have to pay out of pocket and then they won't call.
True. Very, very true. And that's part of our education as we're out in the community to raise awareness about the hospice benefit as well. I think what's so special about what people can understand and what we are able to provide with regards to education is the interdisciplinary team that is involved in a patient's care. We have physicians, hospice physicians, nurse practitioners that are involved with the patient's care. We have an RN case manager that manages all of the medical aspects and comfort measures of the patient in collaboration with the physicians. We have home health aides that provide that care. And anywhere one calls home, not necessarily just a hospice care center, but anywhere, you know, their personal homes, an assisted living community, a skilled nursing facility, and all of these interdisciplinary team members are involved with the patient's care. That also includes the social worker. It includes our chaplains for spiritual support. It includes our volunteers who play such a significant role in our patient's life. So there's so many people that help keep the patient comfortable, finding out what matters most to them at end of life and living the most beautiful life and best quality of life at end of life. Not only are they there to support the patients, but they're there to help the families walk through that journey.
Right, and you guys have the best chaplain. She's awesome. I know her very well, and she comes to our facility as well. So a lot of people don't understand what palliative care is, Mary. So can you talk with our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about a little bit about palliative care and then how that leads people into speaking about the five wishes?
Sure. Thank you. So palliative care is basically care and treatment that addresses symptoms of a disease or illness and helps to address those so that the patient can be comfortable. Palliative care is part of hospice care. So in hospice, we are trying to palliate basically the symptoms of their illness. But palliative care, a lot of people don't realize, is also a separate type of benefit that you can access for care if you don't have a terminal condition, but you have some kind of other long-term chronic condition that causes discomfort, pain, so our organization offers both types of services. Someone may have a long-term serious end-stage condition but not be deemed terminal yet, but they still need help with managing those symptoms and figuring out the resources in the community, the medications they should take, that kind of thing. We have nurse practitioners who can go into the home and help with that. If anyone is interested in more information on either our hospice or palliative care services, they can find that at our website, which is Reflections, with an S, LSC.org. ReflectionsLSC.org, or our phone number is 321-269-4240. And there's also information there about how to get access to our services. Something that people may not realize is you don't have to have a doctor send you to our care. You can call us yourself and ask for a consultation and whether your loved one or yourself are eligible for either of these types of
right care. And then you get the doctor's order
and then the doctor
yeah so that that's order. Really good to know, and I think we should, that's worth repeating. So if someone has a relative at home or they know of someone that could use the extra hands, so to speak, to wash and dress and groom and help feed and keep them comfortable in the spiritual, emotional part of it, they can call you and then you'll say to them, look, come in or we can meet you someplace and speak about it. And then you call your doctor and all that.
Yes, and our intake and admissions team will review the records.
I see Ellen want to jump in there.
Well, and it was respite care too, right? So that you can go to the doctor or go to the grocery store if you need to, because you don't think about that if you're with somebody that needs 24-hour care.
Or you want to go on a cruise. Your caregiver want to go on a cruise, right, and you need a couple days, right? You guys do that. I see Ilana, you could take that one. I've known people that have loved ones at home, and they said, all I need is a three-day break. And Hospice of St. Francis Reflections, with a doctor's order, of course, you could do that as well.
That is correct. We do have respite care, and hospice patients are afforded respite care throughout their benefit period. And respite can be provided both in the inpatient unit, that's a level of care that we do offer at our care centers. Respite care can also be provided in a skilled nursing facility where we have agreements where that may be an opportunity because the family may have people closer you know, family members living closer that can come and live them, visit them while they're in respite care. So skilled nursing facility is another option as
yes.
well for respite care.
So you do
care.
Inpatient as well as outpatient care.
That is correct.
Right.
We have a brand new inpatient facility in Melbourne mm-hmm. in partnership with the Melbourne Regional Medical Center. And so we're both in Titusville and Melbourne have these respite and care centers that are accessible.
Awesome. Another thing people always ask about, and for those of our listeners who are tuning in today, this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we're having a really nice discussion with my friend Mary Lassen and Elena Pitcher from St. Francis Reflections and Life Stage Care, which formerly was just called St. Francis Hospice. And we're talking about the services and the care and how to become a patient, the admission process and all that. So usually families find it very difficult to speak about death and dying. We understand that. But if they sit down and go over the five wishes that you all have, you put it in a booklet out there, they wouldn't find it that difficult because it's actually going through your life stage of your life. Like each decade brings something, right? You're a young person, then you go to college and you have a job, then you get married and you have children, then you get to become a grandparent. But it's stages. So life is about stages. So tell our listeners a little bit about the five stages, the five wishes, and why is it so difficult to bring up that subject and plan?
So the Five Wishes is a wonderful book that was developed to help people have conversations with their loved ones about what they would like to have happen as they are in their final stages of life. And it's a very personal document. It's more than just, I don't want to be on life support. It's, who would you like to have with you at the bedside? Would you like to be in your own home, or would you like to be in a care center? Would you like music, you know, at the bedside? Would you like to be near a window? It's very, very personal. And so it really does help families have that conversation in advance, and it's kind of a warmer, softer approach to it. My son, who's 21, has completed his five wishes. They actually have a version for young adults. And the important thing to remember is, at any age, we may face an end-of-life condition. We don't like to think about that, but we may. And this really helps us to think through the really important things, which is, how do you want your spirit and your soul to be when you're in that situation, and who do you want around you? We do have downloadable copies of the five wishes available on our website. Again, that's reflectionslsc.org, and that is free to download from our website. Obviously, talking about death is hard because we don't want to lose someone we love. That's painful. But death happens to all of us, and so it is helpful to have these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, even around Thanksgiving and Christmas, it's okay to bring it up because that's when everybody's around, right? So, Elena, you know, it's very difficult as it is to have a loved one with a terminal illness. So talk to our listeners a little bit how do you approach when someone has an illness that's aggressive and the treatment has stopped? We know that at that point the person is dying and the family want to put them in hospice. So that must be pretty difficult for you. Talk to our listeners a little bit. How do we approach that?
We work with the most compassionate team of professionals. We have our hospice physicians and our clinical liaisons that work in the hospitals and in the community to be able to have these very delicate conversations with patients and families. It is our job to be able to actively listen to what is being shared to us from the patient and from the family's perspective. I think what allows us to be able to have those conversations comfortably is providing the education and raising awareness about the hospice benefit. Who is all involved in the hospice care? What matters most to the patient and to the patient's family? Empowering them to make the choice. We talked about five wishes, and it is about empowering choices and honoring others. So we have a mission to be able to educate our communities. So making those delicate decisions are not so scary. And developing a plan of care that is customized to that patient and the patient's family who are involved in making those decisions for their loved one at times, and having a customized approach of taking a person-centered approach to really understand what matters most to the patient provides great comfort, and having skilled professionals to be able to have those conversations with the patients to help them understand, having the doctor's input, the nurse practitioner, the clinical liaisons, and also in business development, in those outreach efforts that we are, you know, responsible for in empowering our community, is to raise awareness to our consumers as well.
Right. So it's all about communication and education.
Very much
but Mary,
so.
That brings me to a good point, because we all know about the care plan, right? So when you guys do the care plan with a patient, it is individualized for custom for each person. Do you also have care plan, like a little team meeting at the person's home? Because I would think in our facilities, we have them, you know, we have a place to have a care plan meeting. But when it's at home, you have to meet with them at the kitchen table, maybe?
Kitchen table, living room, out on the patio, or at the bedside if that's what's needed. Yes, absolutely. And the goal is to empower the patient to really drive their care. Which is something that's unique about hospice care, is that we share with the patient and the family all of the options that we can provide for their comfort and care, and then they choose what they're going to do.
So it's really the quality of life versus the quantity.
Quality versus quantity, and a sense of control.
Right, and a person dying with dignity and pain free. We have 2 minutes left. I'll give them a couple extra minutes. So talk to our listeners a little bit about dying with dignity and pain-free, and then give us the phone number and the website for St. Francis Reflection.
So dying with dignity to us at St. Francis Reflections means that, again, the patient is in control. They get to make the choices about how they want this to go, whether they want to take medication or not, do they want to have someone with them at the bedside or not. Everything needs, that person has lost a lot of control over most other things in their life. And so it's very important that they feel like they are the one making these decisions, with our support, of course, problem solving with them, ensuring that we are respecting their beliefs, how they live, who their family is. That's whoever they consider their family. It could be a neighbor or a friend who's helping take care of them. Just being very respectful and kind. Passionate. Those are some of our core values. And when a patient and family experience this kind of care, they feel incredibly supported, and there's a great sense of relief that this fight and struggle is now set aside for something more beautiful, really.
Well, it's empowering to be prepared as well.
Yes.
And I think that's what it's all about, right? I know, Ellen, you and I have spoken about the five wishes before, and how empowering it was for you when you had a loved one.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no and when you're in grief, it's hard to process all of those things. So it was easy just to read a book at that point and just kind of follow step by step. So I had my time to grieve, and then I had my time to
'cause you were prepared.
Pay attention.
Well, yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
It was much nicer.
Yeah, so let's get the phone number and the website for Hospice of St. Francis Reflection. Oh, before we do that, there's an event coming up. And I know that, let me see, I'm not on Thursday, July 21st. It's Volunteer Appreciation Day. I'm not sure.
That was a foundation event for our donors.
Right, so really quick. So if people want to donate to St. Francis Reflections, you do have a foundation. And that money goes towards helping patients and people who are indigent, and providing oxygen and bed and wheelchairs and services. You do help a lot in the community because it's an independent hospice.
We're an independent, right? Nonprofit, and so yes, we do take care of patients regardless of their ability to pay. And our foundation helps support those patients who can't pay, and it also helps to provide grief support and other services.
So anybody who could donate time, money, energy, if you can volunteer, go on the website and check it out. So one of you guys give us a website.
Again, the website is reflectionslsc.org, and our phone number, 321-269-4240.
And I've put all of that information on the website as well as our Facebook pages. So that way everyone can get in touch with you who's listened to the show today. Please make sure you pass this one on. This is an important one. But we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to our sponsors. And then we're going to be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with Phoebe Walker.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency room. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And I'm seeing a big poster in front of me here, too, with everything on it. I think that's what confuses us.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. You can find us on Sita Media, Inc. on Facebook, as well as just type that into your web browser, sitamediainc.com. You'll be able to get us there. All of our shows are posted with pictures and with the audio and a little blurb about what the show is about. So it's easy to find, easy to search. And we are about to embark on a fantastic conversation with Phoebe Walker.
Yeah, my friend Phoebe and I, we've been talking back and forth about getting her on the show. She is a life coach. She's an author. She has her own business where she sells a lot of artwork and crocheted animals. And it's online. You have to go and click on her website and you'll see her there with her big award. She talks about the award she just got. So Phoebe, talk to my listeners a little bit about your life, because it's amazing. Being diagnosed with MS, you were accepted into medical school in 2001, and it never you couldn't go through with it due to so many things, but yet still, the idea that you're so positive helped you so much in life, and you embarked on many other paths. And that's what I love about you, is you didn't let your illness and your diagnosis keep you down. You said, I'm going to find a way out of this.
Right. Well, first of all, thank you. And in order to kind of tell you how I got to where I am, I kind of got to tell you where I started. So 2001 is when I was first diagnosed with MS, but it was a loose diagnosis because I only had one lesion. And multiple sclerosis means multiple sclerosi, and I only had one. So we had to put that off. And then by 2006, it really blew up bad. In 2006, I became blind in both eyes, and I was an invalid. And it didn't happen like a snap of a finger. It was kind of something that progressed. And it seemed like every day I woke up, something further was wrong. And this happened for weeks. It was the longest year of my life.
And scary.
Very, very, very scary. For a while, I prayed daily, God, help me. I don't know what's happening. I really held to my faith. And I believed that I wasn't going to stay there. That was the biggest thing, was having the faith that it wasn't going to stay that way. And probably about three to four months in, things started to change for the positive. And I said, that's it. I'm coming out of this now, and I need to make a huge change for myself. And that started with me paying attention to my diet, to my exercise, to my sleep. And really, I couldn't sleep very much when I was blind. When you're blind, you don't know day from night, and I really didn't sleep very much. So by this point now, I know about my diet, my sleep, my husband to help me walk, because I couldn't walk. I had him throw me over the front of a treadmill and put it on the lowest setting, and I would let it drag my feet back until I could get one foot in front of the other. And
wow.
Now once I'm up walking and I could see again, I don't have 100% vision. I have optic nerve damage in both eyes, but I can see and I can walk and I can do things. I couldn't go to grad school and I couldn't go to med school. What am I going to do now? Well, guess what? I am going to try med school. I am going to try grad school. Well, okay. Med school didn't happen. I was too nervous about what side effects would happen from multiple sclerosis. So I went ahead and went to grad school, got my degree in leadership, which was very strong for me. And it was at a Christian university. It was Asbury Theological Seminary. So I helped to grow my faith. And that was really a pivotal moment for me in moving forward. So now I have a degree. I'm still concerned about my neurologic health. I had over 75 lesions between my brain and my spine. Whenever I went to go see doctors, they would say, you do not match your diagnosis. You do not match the records that are presented. We don't understand how this is happening.
Yeah, because you're so positive, Phoebe, and you've used your life experience to help so many people.
And that's what happened. As soon as I got my grad degree, I said, okay, I've been through a lot. What do I do with this? I have heard people say that you're positive. You're staying on the up. I think you're really helping these people over here and these people over here. Well, what can I do with it? So I decided to write. And that was my first book. I wrote a book called The Silver Lining, Encounters with Angels. Mm. And that was my first award-winning book. In the same competition that my recent one was in. And I started doing book signings, and people would come and read my book. Then they would come back and buy multiple more copies so that they could do studies with other people or share with other family members, people with multiple sclerosis. I now have people that find me on Facebook and ask me, how are you doing so well? You have this many lesions, but yep, you're up, you run, you do ballroom dancing. You stay so active. How are you doing this? And that was my next step. I wanted to create a program because multiple sclerosis has a lot of disabilities, and part of it is debilitating pain. And so I created my new book, and it is called Freedom Found, Productive and Joyful Living in Spite of Chronic Pain. And that one just this past month won a first in category in an international competition. And it's not quite ready on the market yet. I have to finish formatting and putting a cover on it, but I will be for certain to do a very large book reveal when that's time.
She's you're amazing. I mean, I know for 12 years you also did public speaking at local churches and shelters and places where you shared your life experience with people. And I think you're a good motivator as well. Because multiple sclerosis is like a silent disease, and it affects women more than men too.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't know that. But when you have it and you could talk to people about the scarring and the lesions, and it affects your ability to see, to walk, to go to the bathroom. So many people end up with a suprapubic catheter because of the nerves in their bladder and stuff. And it's good to see somebody that actually says, okay, I have this disease, but I'm not going to let it be the end of me, right? And I see, Allie, you're shaking your head again. Go for it.
Oh, I was thinking some similarities. My sister was recently diagnosed with early on-stage Parkinson's. So it was a big surprise to everybody. Nobody had a clue about what to do about it or anything. And it's finding the right people to give you a hand when you need it and where to look next.
To lift you up.
Plus just not feeling helpless. It would be like putting me in an operating room with this, you know, with some dangerous equipment and not knowing what to do next, you know.
And one of the things that helped you the most, Phoebe, was your faith.
Yes.
And I've seen your Facebook postings, and they're, you know, I try to be positive too. I try to say, look, 2/3 of my life is technically over. I'm on my last 1/3.
Right.
And it feels good to know, well, if the good Lord gives me another 20 years, I'm happy with that. But what can I do for that last 20 years? Well, you shed negativity. You shed people who come into your personal space and bring things down. If you run a company, you might shed some employees, whatever it is. But you start shedding and you start keeping what's precious, right?
Right, right.
And you're doing that, whether you know it or not, I see that through your Facebook post. But you've not given up on your faith. So talk to our listeners a little bit about your faith and spirituality and how emotionally that has helped you.
Absolutely. My faith is very strong, and it is something that came to me when I was very, very young. When I was 3 years old, I remember being a little three-year-old, and my father was a pastor, and I would sit up in this attic in a little tiny window, and I would stare across the street at the cross on top of the church. I must have just known then that there was something about it. And that faith has really kind of carried me from childhood till now. And I want to actually add here that there are a lot of people out there that may not believe in God or have that kind of spirituality, but I honestly believe that it doesn't matter what you believe in, as long as you believe strongly enough in something, that's going to be the power that you need within you to draw you forward and make the choices in life that you really kind of need to make to keep moving forward.
So it's a higher power.
It is a higher power.
There is. I believe, yeah, because a lot of people will say, well, I don't go to organized religion, but I am spiritual, and that's okay.
I believe so. Yes. I mean, obviously, I'm a Christian, so for me, it's God, but I still believe very strongly in just having a strong faith in a higher power.
Well, you know, I've told a story on air before that most of the people who live to be over 100, they always say it's three things, a bowl of oatmeal, an apple a day, and Jesus.
Right.
And they live to be over 100.
No,
and
it's chocolate. It's chocolate. It's chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, So you've you also use ballroom dancing?
I do.
To help you get over all these issues. How does that help?
Actually, ballroom dancing is huge. And there are many, many case studies on it. I have a website called danceamileinmyshoes.org. And it's not mile in as in M-I-L-E-I-N. It is mile in, like the myelin sheath. And that is spelled M-Y-E-L-I-N.
So, oh, that's like with the MS.
danceamileinmyshoes.org. And that website has links that you can go to and find various peer-reviewed researches that discuss the insignificance of ballroom dancing for people with demyelinating disorders. It is so good for people with MS. First of all, from the mentality standpoint, it brings you so much joy and so much peace. It helps with balance. We have issues with our brain and just it losing its bulk. And when you work with ballroom dancing, it really helps to increase your brain memory. I can't even begin to tell you, once I started ballroom dancing, suddenly my math numbers were coming back to me, just like snap, snap, snap. I couldn't add 2 + 2 for a while. And once I started ballroom dancing, I now can do math figures in my brain without writing it out. It's just fantastic. So it helps with strength, it helps with dexterity. Many of the things that you get hit on with MS are really significantly improved.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people don't really know what MS is, so we should just tell them it's multiple sclerosis, and it's a silent or invisible disease. And the truth is that many people with MS looks just like you and I.
Yes.
People don't know what's going on inside of them, right?
Right.
And so some of the facts about MS is that, of course, women are 3 times likely to be diagnosed. Most people are diagnosed with MS in their 20s and 40s.
Yes.
And multiple sclerosis is neither contagious nor infectious.
Correct.
So that means people can go, you can't get infected. You yeah. just live, right? So talk to us a little bit about how did that, it is a lifelong condition, but it's not a terminal illness. So how did that affect your family? I mean, that must have been, it's tough. I mean, sometimes men, especially with a common cold, they act like a big baby, you know? God forbid they had to carry a baby for 9 months.
Right.
But, I mean, can you imagine being told that you have MS and then you go on to Dr. Google and you read all this stuff and you're like, oh, my God, there goes my nerves. There goes my walking ability. You know, it's tough.
Well, okay, so first for me, the first probably 2 years, I fought it. I didn't want it because my mother has multiple sclerosis. And it to me, I took it as a death sentence because of how she's managed MS. And I didn't want it. It got to the place, though, where I was like, okay, I do have this. That was in 2006. I do have this. I need to take this seriously. And actually, I think my family just really stepped up to the plate. My son probably had it the worst. He was really angry. He is my oldest child, and he was really angry about it. And he used to try and trap me. When I was stuck in my wheelchair, he would trap me and then go in the other room and be angry. And I was like, till my daughter came in the room and helped me. Now, the thing you need to know about that was that my husband was also deployed with the Navy while I was going through this stuff. So I really didn't have a lot of support. I actually did have a church that came up, and they helped me 4 days a week with food. They helped to clean. They helped to get my kids on early release days. And so that was my early experience with it, was that I had church people that came to help me. And that actually really helped with my personal inspiration and motivation to just get up and fight this and just keep moving forward. So that set my path forward. And because I did that, then I gave hope to my daughter, consequently, who now is diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and she's 24.
It's heartbreaking in a way, because it's a lot to deal with. So talk to our listeners a little bit about your website and the things you're selling.
Okay.
So when somebody clicks on it, give us the website, and you have your books there, but you also have some other stuff, good stuff, crocheted stuff.
I do. So as part of healing from MS and always keeping my mind, preventing my mind from becoming idle, I keep my hands moving. And so I have a website called myseasidecreations.com. And there you will find books, and you will find artwork, because I paint artwork, and I have crocheted stuffed animals, and you'll find those. And then I have made jewelry there. And then I also have a website called Books by Phoebe, and that one is strictly going to be for my books. I will have all of my nonfiction books there that I've talked about here, and I am now working on my first fiction book series, and all the details for that will be there then, too.
So Phoebe, I can't take it in. It's so much. You need like 5 shows.
Yes.
So your inspiration for writing, not only did it come from the disease itself, but other, you have a lot of characters and a lot of ideas. Where do you get all this inspiration from for writing and your characters from?
My characters currently for my fiction book actually came from my childhood. I didn't discuss earlier, but I had a very traumatized childhood. So I had a lot of dreaming that took place And so I'm using some of those dreams to help create some of my characters, and I combine them with some of the people that I know in my life now. And so
we might end up in her book, Danny.
Yes, you might.
We just might. She might need a little Indian lady in there someplace.
There you go.
One over there, too.
Yeah, so the idea is just to stay active.
Now, Ellen has given me the time up there, Elle. Thanks. So give us a website one more time if somebody wanted to check it while we're on air.
The website, I'm going to give you Books by Phoebe. Each website you go to has links to my other website. So if you remember booksbyphoebe.com or myseasidecreations.com are my two websites.
So in between knowing that you were diagnosed with MS, knowing that your husband was deployed, having two children at home, thank God for Faith, you also volunteered with Hospice of St. Francis for 7 years. Did I read
I
that
did.
Correctly?
You did. And it is, in my opinion, the best hospice. I love them. They really are the best.
Yeah. How did you, but now was that before your diagnosis or after?
That was after. I wanted to give back to a community that gave to me so endlessly. I mean, they brought me meals 4 nights a week for, and all the other things they did for 4 months almost. That's a lot for any church to do for any one family. And I was like, wow, I need to give back.
Wow. And you know, there are people with arms and legs, eyesight, ears, nose, throat, everything functioning well, and they won't give back one measly hour to any nonprofit in this town. And you ask yourself, like, can we bottle and sell you, Miss Phoebe? Because,
<That's sweet.
laughs> because, you know, like people, you know what I mean, Allie? A lot
Absolutely.
Of people, they don't want... It's like they stay in their own cocoon and they don't want to branch out and give back, stay in their own box. Like Ellen always says, they stay in their lane, right? But you volunteered out of that. You veered out of that and you're doing so much. So where did you get your creative side from? Because you're creative, not just in writing, but in you're blessed with your hands.
Yeah, I just think that's a gift from God. I can't even tell you anywhere else. That's just it.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
It is. Just practice.
Wow.
So tell us again, what's the future bring? More books?
More books.
And you're a life coach as well?
I do life coaching also. Right now, I would like to strictly stick to coaching my new book that is called Freedom Found, Productive and Joyful Living in Spite of Chronic Pain, which will be available in the fall.
Excellent. And so right now, the books are available on the website?
They're not available yet.
Okay.
But when you do go to buy it, they will be available on Amazon and on my website. booksbyphoebe.com.
Do you ever get writer's block?
Yes.
You do. You do.
Yes, I do.
Because you're running, but I it's good to know you get a writer's block because it's normal.
It is very normal.
Makes
I
me
do
feel
the same
normal.
Thing with my artwork too. It's like, I don't know what I'm painting today. But the idea is just to sit down and write something, anything, even if it's just one sentence, and then you move on. You got to write something every day.
How long did it take you to write the books?
My first book took me 5 years. The second book, I wrote it probably in about 5 months. I put it down for 3 years and threw it away. And then I got this feeling that said, pick it back up and finish it. I finished it in 2 weeks and sent it off to the competition.
Wow. That's awesome. And so, Yela, talk to us about the one you just won the award for. Give us a little tidbit. So I'm sure people would go on your website and get some of the books.
Yes. This new book is a mindset pain management program. It helps you to get into your mind and reframe negative thinking and help you to be more positive. You learn that when you're really upset, that your pain increases, so you want to find a way to decrease your pain by improving positive thinking.
See, another example of when emotions are high,
mm-hmm.
maybe intelligence isn't low in this case, but your neurons
yes.
fire off differently.
And it produces negative chemicals in your body.
Exactly. How did you learn all of that part of it? Was that where your med school pieces started coming in?
I was nursing. I did CNA, yeah. then nursing, then was going med school. So I have a lot of med experience.
She followed the chain.
Yeah, but MS is such an undiscovered, I don't even know what they're calling it now. It's not like diabetes, correct?
It is a disease. It's a disease. It's a
neurological.
And people, really get scared when you say you have MS, but
you're so foreign.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of
research. Well, in nursing, we're seeing yeah. a lot of it. But you also said when you walked in that you had, you're stressed out right now because of the student. the foreign student, and you had some lesions?
Actually, I was stressed. We were trying to do adopting. My husband and I have been in the system trying to adopt a teenager out of the local system, and we had a really bad experience, and that caused me to have my first exacerbation since 2006. And so we
Phoebe,
said, no.
We're going to have to tell you to breathe, relax,
right,
dance,
slow down.
Go to the beach.
So, but we are having an exchange student coming from Norway. She'll be here for a whole year, and we're looking forward to that.
Right. So when you published your first book, how did that change your thought process about writing books? Because when you publish, it's such a great feeling, right, when you publish your book, and then you're starting to write again.
I was nervous with the first one because I had to write about a lot of negative stuff in my family, and I didn't want people to come after my family because of what was said. So that one, really, I was still nervous. But this one, when this one made the award and it was my second one, I decided maybe I actually am a writer and maybe I'll try fiction.
Would you say that's what literary success means to you?
Yes.
Is that you got the award?
Yes.
Because writing the book is easy sometimes. It's marketing the book, right?
It's actually getting the book out there and actually getting into a competition. Anybody could write a book, but it doesn't mean that it's a good book.
Yeah. So I tell me about it. I know. I have Ellen and I are both authors as well. And one of the things I find with authors too, everybody has a story to tell.
Yes.
And you have multiple stories to tell. So you have to draw from within and your life experience as well.
And it's going to come out in fiction form, but it's some of it going to be true.
Right. And do you
the best kind.
Yeah, and do you ever, is that about me, Phoebe?
Yes.
Do you ever get a pushback from your family and friends who probably might be part of that book?
They're excited about it.
Yeah.
They all, let me be in it.
Well, we have 1 minute, I think Danny said. So give us a website one more time so people could check out Phoebe's creations. They could check out your book. They can be happy for you that you won an award. I mean, I think when somebody wins an award or becomes Miss Universe or finishes med school or law school or becomes an electrician or whatever it is, their success is also our success.
Yes.
And that's how life should be. We should be happy for each other. And people make mistakes, they fall, they get up.
Right.
But yes. You're doing it. So.
And you have to get up as many times as you get kicked down.
And be positive.
Right. So it is booksbyphoebe.com and myseasidecreations.com are my two websites.
Again, you know, Dr. Ceta Gibson says in my head about the five F's. What is it? Family, faith, finances, forgiveness, and a little food.
There you go. That's it.
Phoebe's got it all. Yes. I sometimes add in another F.
So
sometimes.
We may have to change all those F's to PH's.
Yeah.
I love it.
And that'll be part of the next book.
There you go.
Well, once again, Ceta, another fantastic show on Viewpoint with Ceta and Friends. St. Francis, we've just been lovers of you guys forever, the foundation as well as the services that you provide. So thank you so much for, again, sharing all of that great information. And Phoebe Walker, you're just a rock star. You're like, we just see you doing all kinds of fantastic things, not just for yourself and your own family, but obviously you're helping and blessing others.
She's weathering some storms, man.
Amen,
she's
sister.
She's empowered me
so
today.
We will have another fantastic guest. We'll have more fantastic guests next week. Thank you, Allie Tamber, for sitting in with us today. And Ceta, for getting all these great guests. We'll see you next week on Viewpoint with Ceta and Friends, right here on 1510 WWBC.
You swing.